to Black White Mass Incarceration Show. I am your host, Sierra Cobb. Black White Mass Incarceration Show is a space that is used to uplift the unheard voices of the criminal and social justice issues that many face today. Thank you for tuning in. I hope you enjoy. Experience. So without further ado, introduce yourself and just kind of give us a backstory about you and who you are.
I'm Bobby Bostic. The relevance of my story to this podcast and to viewers in general is that at the age of 16 in 1995, I committed a robbery and I was given 241 years for the robbery. I served 27 years. And I've been out 15 months, but 23 years into my sentence, the judge who sentenced me came back and said she had made a mistake by sentencing me to die in prison, because when she sentenced me to die in prison, she told me that I would die in the Department of Corrections. Over the years, they said juvenile brain science development came out, and the U.S. Supreme Court said a juvenile shouldn't get life without if they didn't kill nobody. But Missouri said that I don't have life without, I got 241 years, which is no big difference between the two. But since they was able to play word games, they said, okay, well, he's going to die in prison, basically. And they appealed my case to the U.S. Supreme Court. They said no. So I was essentially stuck in prison until 2021, the Missouri legislature passed the Bobby Bostic Law, which allowed me and hundreds of other juveniles to go for parole after we served 15 years. I had already did 26 years, so they gave me a year out date, and I was released November 9th, 2022. And since I've been out, let me backtrack real quick. While I was in prison, I obtained my Associate's of Science degree. There wasn't no Pell Grant, so I had to raise the money on my own. I wrote 15 books while I was in prison, took hundreds of rehabilitation classes, and changed my life. And that's what made the judge advocate that she think I should be released. And since I've been out of prison, I continue my college education to get my bachelor's degree. I do public speaking across the country, and I'm promoting my books across the country. And I got a nonprofit where we give to single mothers. I volunteer in the youth detention centers to teach kids how to do writing workshops. So I'm kind of all over the place trying to do positive things to make up for a lot of wrong I had done when I was a child.
That's an amazing story. So tell us, how was it to be, how old were you when you were incarcerated? What age?
16.
How was it to be, did they send you straight to the adult prison, or were you in juvenile and then went to adult prison?
No, they sent me straight to adult prison.
So how was that, being 16, you know, being sent straight to an adult prison at a young age? How did you bear that? Because that's a lot. You're in there with a bunch of grown men who's been in there for a long time, who are traumatized. And how was that experience?
It was either sink or swim. I had to swim. It was, you know, as I wrote in my autobiography, one of the books I got out is all my books are available on Amazon under my name, Bobby Bostic, or wherever books are sold. But inside of my autobiography, I was explaining that in that type of environment, you got to grow short teeth or you be bitten, right? Mm-hmm. So I grew short teeth not to be a predator, but to be able to defend myself if the predators had came at me. Unfortunately, though, I didn't have those problems. Nobody ever came to me crazy in prison, even though there was a testing ground for young guys like me. I was tough, none of that. It's just God protecting me. I never had any of them type of problems. So I was able to just survive. I just went there, started getting high, smoking marijuana like everybody else did every day to get us through, to stay medically doped up, in a sense, because that's how we cope with that time, was we stay high all day. And until that they can no longer satisfy me or sustain me. So I had to reach for something deeper, and that came through the form of reading dozens and dozens of books. Then I read hundreds of books, and as I kept reading books, I'm like, well, let me write about the things that I know. Let me write books about my generation, books about prison, books about my mama, just living in the inner city, things that I had experienced. So that's how I ended up writing 15 books by reading so much. I want to write about my own life experiences. So I made the best first in that type of situation. It was a hopeless situation, but I found hope in a hopeless situation and turned it around and just decided to do something positive with my life despite a death sentence, despite the judge telling me I was going to die in prison. I found a new life by stop getting high, by sobering myself, by seeing the world bigger than my street corner, bigger than my neighborhood, seeing opportunities in the world and wanting to get to those opportunities. And trying to get to all those opportunities, it let me know that my life was bigger than a life sentence. My life was bigger than prison, and I wanted more, so I strove for that. It took years and years, but I stayed true to those dreams. And in the process, it changed a lot of other people's lives.
So, what advice can you give anybody that's young going through incarceration, or anybody that's, you know, just their first time going through incarceration? How are they able to be able to better themselves in a very chaotic, traumatizing environment?
Yeah, because it sounds easy when I'm saying it. I'm talking about I went to college, I read all these books. But prison, you're surrounded by noise. You're surrounded by chaos and madness, and the library is empty. You would think in prison that the library is where everybody would be at. But it's only several, the same guys in the library. It's 30 empty seats in there, but it's too much. You can't barely walk outside because everybody on the yard. Everybody want to hang out. So a young guy that's want to be something, prison can be his university. It can be its own personal college. It don't have to be an academic degree. It can be a degree set for itself. They got 30 books on biology in there. Just say if you master all those books, you become a biologist without a certificate, without a degree. So if somebody's determined to do something, a young guy, I would tell him, don't go in there and just confound to the prison madness. Do something different. Find your purpose in life. Don't count days. Make the days count. Don't just be like, man, I got 6 months left. No, make those 6 months count. Become great. I got a poem inside of my book. My book called Mind Diamonds. It's one of my books. The poem is called Some of the World's Greatest Minds Are in Prison, which is true. If you look at all my books on Amazon, all that artwork was done by prisoners inside of my book. It's so much talent in there. You got geniuses in there.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of them is lifers, though. It seems like the people get the most time sometimes. We the ones who wake up and become conscious, but now we stuck in there. And only Jews that we can give to is to the people that's getting out. And a lot of them don't take it because they come right back or go get killed because they're not focused and determined as we is, right? So I'm determined to be a voice for those lifers. But for the young person in prison, find your way, man. Read the books. Find your purpose in life, what you want to do. And prepare yourself for that when you get out and the world is at your feet. If you're hungry enough, you can make all these dreams happen. You don't have to have the resources. You don't worry about that. Worry about first what you're going to do, and then all that stuff will come to you if you work hard enough for it.
That is true. I appreciate that knowledge. So tell us, what was the effect? What did incarceration have effect on your family? Because I think we tend to forget about how it affects families, that families are also incarcerated with their loved one. It's not just the person that's doing the time, but the family is doing the time with their loved one. So what kind of effect did that have on your mom, that for one, you were sentenced to all that time, but two, that you were incarcerated at a young age?
I got a book called, I keep referring to my books because if anybody listening, it can answer my question in more depth than I can in this little short time. But my book called Life Goes On Inside Prison. I got a chapter called How Spouses and Family Do Time with the Prison also. In that chapter, I'm explaining how when you go to prison, you don't go to prison alone. Your family gets sentenced to that time too. They got to come see you. They got to send you money. They got to write you. All this stuff. And they also worry about you. They don't just hang up the phone when you get off the phone. They worry about, is he okay? If he in hole, is he gonna go crazy because he locked in that cell all day? You're a part of them, so you victimize society, yourself, your victims, and your own family because they doing that time with you. And it was hard on my mother because I was so young, and for me to get the time I had, and she was helpless to do anything. Didn't even have money for an attorney, so it was like, what I'm gonna do to get him out? Only thing she could depend on was faith in God that he would somehow get me out. And I know that was stressful for her in a way that she couldn't explain to me, but she explained some of it in her letters to me. And that led me to write my other book, Dear Mama, which is telling kids, you get one mother, please listen to her because everything she's telling you is right. If you get locked up, she's the only one gonna be there for you, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. But I understand what she was going through now as an adult too, but we take our families through more than we know for a little crime that we trying to commit. Whatever excuse we got ain't gonna be worth the pain that we're gonna take them through, or we're gonna do it ourselves when we're inside the prison cell.
That is true. My husband's incarcerated, so I relate to that pain and the worry and the stress and all of the above. It's not easy. The family is a victim as well of the person that's incarcerated. So tell us what type of thing, like how was the staff? I know we, talk a lot about, the prison environment. But how was the staff? I know the staff is another big issue of how they treat people incarcerated.
Again, for people who are listening, please get my book, Life Goes On Inside Prison. I got a chapter. Chapter 8 is called How the Guards Abuse Their Authority, right? I'm not making corporates or saying they all bad. I'm just saying when people got that type of power, when it goes unchecked, it's abused. And that chapter is aptly titled How the Guards Abuse Their Authority. And when they do, people like me that's in prison suffer. If I go to solitary confinement, right now, ain't no AC coming out. It's the heat. The cell is 120 degrees. If I go to the solitary confinement in the winter, it's like 20. If it's 30 outside, my cell is 10 or 15 degrees. So we suffer in there too. I'm not trying to say we didn't do nothing in society. We harmed people too. We created victims. We did things in society that's worth warranted punishment, but not that type of punishment where you got guards from vindictives, guards that abuse their authority, that treat you a certain type of way when you're already locked up. It's like kicking a man when he's already down, the stuff that guards do to us in prison. And I don't want to complain about it over and over again, so I just will tell people to please read my book, How the Guards Abuse. That chapter in my book is called How the Guards Abuse Their Authority, while going to depth of that. And then I got another book on prison. It's called Time, Endless Moments in Prison. Now, in that book, I explain the psychological effects that this have on us when guards abuse their authority, when we're away from our families, and how people in society need to know that 85% or 90% of us do get out of prison. So even if you stay in the suburbs, my auntie may be wealthy. I'm moving out there with her when I get out. So don't think that we not far removed from y'all. We all, a lot of us are coming back. So people need to know what happens to prisoners when they go to prison because y'all paying taxes for us to be in there for one. And then two, we're going to be released and we're going to be our neighbors. We are y'all uncles, brothers, sisters. One out of two families got somebody in the criminal justice system. So I go into detail in my book, Life Goes On Inside Prison. And then I go into even more depth in my other book, Time as Moms in Prison. So for people who want to know psychologically how this affect the families of prisoners and the prisoners they sell, please read my books in a way that is explained in a way I can't go into depth in a short interview.
Yeah, that's very insightful. All of that is true. It is a very psychological game that they play. That was one thing that I was trying to work on was just changing the culture of prison, especially when it comes to guards, and change that them versus us mindset that they teach them in training as they come in as correctional officers to look at people incarcerated as if they're the worst of the worst. My favorite saying is always that they treat dogs and cats and animals better than they treat human beings in prison, and that definitely should not be the case, because it definitely tears people down, and you're tore down even more when you come out from prison. If you didn't have a mental health situation before, you're definitely gonna have one when you come home. And so it's important to start working on mental health and having more mental health options inside of prison. I run a nonprofit. Me and my husband run a nonprofit, and that's one thing that we have aimed to work on is providing holistic mental health inside of prison to help heal people, because that's the main key and the main thing to get people back on track and probably even keep them away from the prison system is for them to work on their mental health and be able to self-regulate their emotions so they're not making unconscious decisions. So that's really important. So tell us, you know, what are some of the things that you are doing in the community since you have, I know you kind of said it in the beginning, but kind of go into depth of the things you're doing. Tell us about your nonprofit and things you're doing with that.
My nonprofit, my first book I wrote is called Dear Mama. It's my mama life story. She passed away when she was 42 while I was inside prison in part due to the stress that I and my little brother caused by living the street life that we was living, and with our son being sentenced to die in prison. But I wrote that book, and I was reading it after I got it published. It took me 19 years to get it published. I published my books in 2020 while I was still in prison. But when I was reading the book, I was reading a part about what her doing charity and all that. And I was like, man, I want her life to be remembered more than just a book. So I want her legacy to live on. So I created that nonprofit in tribute to her. The nonprofit is called Dear Mama, Mothers Assistant Mothers Association. And we just do giveaways twice a month throughout St. Louis, free toys, clothes, food, and stuff like that to single mothers that don't have none and families in general. And I go to the juvenile detention center and teach writing workshops, how to write business plans, how to fill out job resumes, how to write poems, how to write essays, to teach them to use the art form of writing to express themselves and study violence, or to teach them how to write a business plan to get some real money instead of committing petty crimes and being locked up. Write your business plan and figure out how to get some real money. Don't worry about the resources. If I sat in prison with 241 years, I didn't have no resources. All I had was an ink pen. And through that pen, I wrote books on pen and paper. They sat dormant for years, but I stayed true to that, and they got published. And I had a business plan. Now I got my own publishing company. I'm doing all the things that I dreamed of in prison. So I'm telling them, not somebody that you read about or I read about. Here goes an example right here. I went in here at 16 like some of y'all did. I created a plan. I didn't have no resources to start a publishing company or to even get out of prison to sell a book. But now I'm out and I'm selling books. So this is what I did. This is how you can do with your own business plan, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Sober living home, stuff like that. I'm just trying to do all that I can. I go try to get bills passed, legislation for other prisons that I left behind, try to help them out individually and in mass, like trying to get legislation passed or individually, how I can help those guys. You can't walk your yard 27 years and forget people. But whenever I'm reading a book, like I'm reading this book today called Love and Justice by Miles Moore and Jonathan Ernst. Miles Moore met a guy who was serving 50 years, fell in love with him. He got out, she married him, right? But inside the book, he taking me back to how it was when I was trying to file legal work to get out. Well, he taking me back to that hopelessness that you can feel, but then at the same time, the drive and ambition and motivation you can have to get out. And it reawakened that hunger in me. Like, and as I'm reading this stuff, I'm thinking about all the guys that are sitting in prison. I'm like, man, they can do what me and he did, what him and I did, if they just can put their hunger in the right place. Don't give up. It's a way out of it. You just got to keep fighting. And I wish they can read the book as I'm reading it so they can feel that same hunger. But that hunger is what got me and him out. We walked the yard talking about that, and I wish them other guys can feel that so they can get themselves out, because once you outgrow the prison, you become too big for it. And even if you don't, even if they give you life and you have to do it, you can have an impact in society even from there. It just depends on how your voice is and how what you do with it. It's just no giving up. It's so much we all can do. And I wish that inspiration could be contagious and people can feel that spirit that me and him felt to get out of prison and keep pushing and keep doing positive things. So that's it.
Yeah, that's true. And it kind of reminds me of the Centoya Brown story. where her husband was her backbone. And even though she had all that support behind her, it didn't really get her out. You know, her faith got her out. And, you know, he said God told him to, you know, sell all his furniture at his house. And he did, so he could move down there so she could have somewhere to go. You know, the first time she was denied a parole, and the second time she was able to get it. But I mean, that is the thing a lot of people do give up on, because you feel like you're fighting a losing battle. I know I feel like that sometimes, but that's one thing that, you know, my organization wants to do, if we can get people and funding behind it, is to help people get out of prison. Because, you know, I live in North Carolina.
And Sierra, the way that don't say if, you are going to get the funding. See, that's the thing. You are going to get the funding. And that Centoria Brown book, right? Reading her book 20 times is what helped me get through. Like, it's right around the corner. Like, I thought I was going to get out through the courts. It never happened that way. They changed the law in Missouri. This conservative state, they usually never change laws in a state like this, right? But they did, and it's called the Bobby Boston Law, but it didn't just help me get out. It helped over 200 people get out of prison. So we never know the impact that we can have. You know, like you saying with the fund and what y'all can do, is the shirt you got on say unlock the vote, right? I went in at 16. I couldn't vote then, and I still can't vote, right? So now I got to unlock the vote. I got to get my right to vote back. I got to fight for that, because if I went in as a kid and couldn't vote, why should my right be taken away to vote? So these are things that we ain't powerless to change. We got to do what we got to do. The funding is out there. We just got to keep reaching, and then we're going to grab it. And then all that we're trying to do can happen, but not overnight. Not everything, but a lot of things can get done, and we can do. We just got to keep fighting the fight.
That's true. That is so true. And you know, we did the Unlock the Box. We had where we were actually overturned, where people were able to vote. And then as soon as this last legislation election we had, they reversed it. So now we're back to square one of trying to unlock the vote again. But it's always going to be a fighting battle. And I appreciate those words, because sometimes you feel like you do so much and then you're still overlooked, or people just don't understand the magnitude of what you're trying to do. Because I've had a few funders tell me that that's not their priority. You know, legal services is not their priority. And I feel like sometimes when you're at a standstill with a legislation, because in North Carolina, we're at a standstill, period. We've had no criminal justice bills looked at all, and probably won't, just because of, you know, who's in office. I mean, we've lobbied and everything, and they still just put it to the side. So my thing is thinking outside the box of how I can help get people home without, you know, without legislation right now, because that's not going to be our go-to. But, you know, some people just don't understand the magnitude when they're not actually going through it. But I'm going to keep pushing and fighting, because, you know, eventually somebody will believe in the mission that we're trying to push and pull. But yeah, I appreciate that. So tell me, what things you think, or how we can change this landscape, because it's an up and down hard battle that a lot of us face in different states, especially in a lot of conservative states. We're extremely conservative now. I know where you are is conservative. So what are your thoughts on how we can continue to move the ball forward, even when we have so much pushback?
You move the ball forward by, first of all, reach out to those three people in power that is to serve them, to show them I'm human just like you. Your daughter go to soccer just like my daughter. In fact, they are part of the same club. Unfortunately, my husband did this crime. Or unfortunately, the drug, the rule, even in rural communities, the opioid epidemic is hitting real hard. So we all got commonalities. They family suffering from things too, but at the same time, they are human. My husband or my cousin, my brother, my loved ones in prison, they are human. Let's just reach each other where we at as human. Let's find out what we got in common first, stand on that ground before we can bridge the things that we don't have in common. Then there's no blue and red. There's no Democrat, Republican. Let's see each other as human. So now I got to reach out to those people where they at. I can't just say, oh, man, they conservative. They're not going to change their heart, et cetera, et cetera. Once I reach them, then we can have a standing point, a common ground, and work from there, because we all can see the differences we have. We got to reach those people and show them that we human too. We ain't got to just protest and just get be loud. No, we got to come to the table and say, look, this is what we got in common. This is what we need to work on. This is why we're trying. We're not asking you to get us to get out of a free jail call. We're just trying to chop off the block. Even first, you got to start with elderly inmates, juvenile inmates, and then find a way in between. Somehow, some way, keep pushing. Ain't no giving up. If some people have done crimes so heinous, they may not get out. But if they truly change their life, do something in there, man. Have an impact from in there, man. Even if you can't ever get out, you plead guilty to a life sentence to spare yourself the death penalty. Even still, if you change your life, have an impact where you at. This is where God may want to use you at, right where you at in that cell. So it's no hopelessness. We just got to keep driving forward. I'm not somebody who read a book. I live this. I'm still serving 241 years. I'm still on parole, meaning they can send me back to prison any day. So I ain't just get out of prison. I'm free, but I feel free. I don't walk around thinking about parole. I walk around thinking about, look at this world. It's beautiful out here. This is what I fought for every day. I'm out here. Now I can't forget those I left behind. Let me reach back. I can't forget. It's impossible to forget. When you was walking the yard with these guys trying to figure out how to get out of prison, they trying to help you get out, even though some of them stuck. So now that I'm out here, I can't ever forget. I can't forget the little kid who was hungry. So when I'm doing giveaways, I see myself as a kid, but now I'm being fed by somebody who understands what it's like to go without resources. So there's no hopes in this. We just keep driving forward. That's it.
Yeah. And what you're doing, as well as the things that you're doing, is also helping a lot of people, you know, stay away from crime, because a lot of crimes are committed due to poverty, due to low job wages, due to living in, you know, a neighborhood that is not safe as some other neighborhoods are. And so by you giving food and clothes, that is deterring them away from doing those crimes. And I think that's important that we have a lot more community outreach that meets the people in the middle where they're lacking, because a lot of us are lacking. And that's when we tend to go commit crimes, because, you know, we got families to feed. You know, we got parents that need help. And so that's extremely important. And it's important for the kids, because, you know, now in my generation, you know, we had a village. My great grandma, you know, would watch all the kids in the neighborhoods when the single moms didn't have nowhere to go. You know, when they had to go to work and they had nobody to watch the kids, she would watch them. She would feed them. And then by the time the mom came, you know, they were already fed and ready to go to bed. But things have changed. And so you have a lot of single parent homes and they're stressed out and they're working two and three jobs due to inflation. And so it's important that we begin to rebuild those villages to help one another, because I feel like we've come to the point where, you know, it's just survival mode for everybody. And, you know, that leads you to crime, that leads you to committing things that you would never do. But you got a baby that's looking at you that's hungry. So, you know, you got to go do what you got to do. And especially people that are formerly incarcerated, making sure that we're not continuously penalizing them, because we're all human. We all fall short. We all make mistakes. And America likes to cancel people out. And, you know, we got to understand that everybody's human. We all make mistakes. You do have some people who might not be able to live among society, but they also still need to be treated as human, and ensuring that they're receiving the correct holistic mental health so that they could be the best that they could be, whether in prison or out. So that's extremely important. So is there anything else that you want to let us know, Bobby?
Before I go, I just want to say, as to some of you just said about the younger generation and all that about kids, right? It's an African proverb. If a child that don't feel the warmth of the village, that child will burn the village down, right? So you have these kids, you'd be like, why are they victimizing their own communities? Because they don't feel like they're a part of society. So they create their own subculture. They go take what they want because it's not given to them. We got to let them know that we got to bridge the generation gap between young and old. Let those kids know that all resources are for you, where you don't have to go rob, steal, and kill or take. Be patient, because that rob, killing, and stealing, this is where it's going to get you. And when we stuck in there, it ain't no looking back. And for the lifers, or if this can't go into a prison, if lifers can't hear this, for those people who got loved ones serving a life sentence, let them know in prison, once you break out of prison mentally, physical is not far behind. You got to break out of prison for real, though, mentally. You got to separate yourself from the prison culture. You got to not want to be a part of that for real. And somehow the universe, if you're not spiritual, the universe, if you're spiritual, God, his power will get you out of there. I mean, you got to break out of there mentally. And then physics is right behind it. It's not far from behind it. You really got to break out of there, though, in the sense to where society can see your work and say, this is who we need out here. Let's pull them out. And he can say, bring these with me because they changed like I have, or let's go back and get these. But we got to be about change, first of all, for people to want us out. Mm-hmm. And when we get hard out here, we got to stay about that change and fight our prison mentality when we get angry, not to react and things like that. It's a work in progress, but we got to work on it, stay out here, stay free. People who want to know more about me, you can just Google my name, Google Bobby Bostic. My books are available on Amazon, or you can see all my videos on YouTube. And look at my website, minddiamonds.net, or freebobbybostic.com. And again, please read my books on Amazon. Listen to the interview. Listen to what I said. Get the juice from it. Our kids are not hopeless. We can save them. And for those who are in prison serving time, stay with your loved ones. Understand their mental health issues or whatever, but stay with them. We need y'all while we're in there. Please don't abandon us. Show us humanity so we can stay human and show our humanity when we release. And for us out here, when we're struggling, let's go find a legal way to pay the bills. Mm-hmm. If you're a woman, you ain't got to sell yourself to pay your bills. It's another way. Use your mind. Mm-hmm. If you're a child suffering in poverty, just know that it's an end to this. And it, because sometimes we all suffer in poverty, but it's a better way. And I'm not preaching. I'm not saying that I haven't lived. I'm living everything I see. I'm still living it. So I'm not just talking about what I heard, seen, or been through. I'm still going through it. I'm a part of it. We all a part of the struggle. But that's struggle in stride and not struggle with a way out or feel like we can't get out. Let's stay hopeless. I mean, hopeful in a hopeless situation. Mm-hmm. So that's me, Free Bobby Bosco on Instagram, Free Bobby Bosco on Twitter. Just keep following me in the movement and let's follow each other, but let's encourage each other and see the positive even in negative situations.
Yeah, and let's connect, you know, even after this, because the only way to move the movement is to move it together and not individually. And, you know, that is another problem that I see. We move in silos and not move together. And the only way to change anything around is for us to move like we did in MLK days. You got to move together. You can't move separately, because if you move separately, ain't nothing going to work. But yeah, Bobby, I appreciate that. I appreciate everything. Keep doing what you're doing. Keep schooling people on the gems that you just dropped here, and stay up. And I appreciate you so much. We're going to connect after this is over. All right.
All right. Thank you.
Thank you. Have a good one.
You too.